Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
So this episode is sponsored by Laura Cook, who just became a new Patreon. Listen out for details later in the show of how you could sponsor Dumpty Dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show with the reality docudrama that is centred on Lambridge in the heart of Millers. I'm the not-forgotten slap, Royfield Brown, and today I'm joined by the...
totally exhausted granny that is Jacqueline Berthoud in Sangwan. This week's Dumpty Dum tune is from Helen and her daughter Holly. Wasn't that fantastic? All that percussion. And on this episode, we are lucky enough to hear from six lovely caller-inners, which is just awesome. So we heard from Witherspoon with Angus Haggis, Jenny with a G, Claire Asprey, and from Christopher McKiddy, who's called in before and has the most beautiful voice. Thank you for calling in again, Christopher. Plus, we have two first-time caller-inners, Nathan Mia from Oregon and Lily Boxer.
Plus, as well as all that good stuff, we're going to have Tweet of the Week from Purple Pumpkin. And we have the social media roundup from our Katie, who's she's kind of not moonlighting from her duties on Instagram. As well as that, we have Facebook roundup, and we're going to be welcoming our new members from our Facebook group.
That's absolutely brilliant. But first, let's look at the week in Ambridge from our Sue, the Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Sue, Queen or Tart, on the Twitters, and another week in Ambridge. It felt like there were a lot of secrets coming home to roost this week, while still more of them are being laid. The most important one, I think, is that Tracy does not appear to be at the chicken factory any longer, but instead was in the park in Borchester. So it really sounds like she's got the push and is hiding it at least from the children. I do wonder what Jazza knows. Eddie knew all about what George was up to with the vaping and did nothing to stop him. After all, it's a Grundy scheme, could have made them a few bob. Eddie is clear that he should have done something and doesn't want Emma and Will to find out his part. I was really hoping for a dramatic showdown, but it was not to be. Rory is now sleeping with Julianne and was missing her, although he lied about seeing other people to Ben. I'm not surprised that Ben had a go at him. I do wonder what we'd think if it turned out Lily was seeing a much older man. Oh, hang on, that is what's happening, except he can't even pay for his own kettle, let alone pay Lily. Chelsea knows about the postbox and uses it to claw back a tiny bit of power against George. George really is a right little sod winding Chelsea up and taking Poppy's guinea pig for a shampoo and set. I wonder what Poppy made of it all. Ardil put the cat amongst the pigeons, telling Denise that she's got a secret admirer at work. Yakko very much poo-pooed the idea, and Alistair is denying how he feels. It's just a matter of time, surely, although Alistair is saved by Denise moving to another practice for 6 months. George, the manipulative little so-and-so, wound both Will and Ed up, and will now have two bedrooms to choose from, though I don't blame him not wanting to still stay in the mobile home, to be honest. Mia and Brad have both done well in their exams, and Brad is not going back into the vaping business. Thank goodness for that. It's a right roller coaster ride. I hope you'll agree. Well, till next week, then. Should be a good one.
Thank you for that, Queen Autar. So, how was your week in Ambridge, Madame Bertot?
Well, I've been extremely distracted, so I might not be up to speed because I've only listened to everything once. I've had my granddaughter here, which is so exciting. First time in 4 years. So it's been distracting, exhausting, but great fun.
Jacqueline, I'm going to chastise you because everybody knows that I run a tight ship here when I do Dumb Dumb.
Yes,
I like to keep everything completely just to do with Ambridge. But you're telling me that the Archers didn't get your undivided attention this week. Wowza. All right, yeah. But how's your granddaughter, more to the point?
Oh, it's just been so lovely. She's as lovely as she was 4 years ago. You know, 4 years is a very long time.
Absolutely. And how old is she, 12?
No, she's 14 now.
Oh, wow.
But she's a lovely, lovely, immature 14-year-old, which I just love. She resembles my daughter, her mum, so much that it's just shocking. And I posted some photographs on my Facebook page because she loves cooking with me. And I've got a massive tomato glut. So we've been dealing with tomato sauce for 3 days, which is also exhausting. And so many people have said that she's just the carbon copy of her mum, which for me, you know, I get very emotional about these kind of things. It's just fantastic because there you are. That life continues despite what shit it throws at you.
Maybe we'll weave in you spending time with your granddaughter who hasn't been to France for 4 years.
I know.
In between a little bit of caller interaction. So I should do this first.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Hello, Royfield and Jacqueline. This is Lily from Hertfordshire, first-time caller-innerer. My pedigree is Calendar Girls. I'm calling about the GCSE results this week with my teacher hat on. I hope that any dum-to-dum listeners who received any exam results these last few weeks have achieved what they wanted or needed to go on to their next steps. Exams are really hard. We know this, of course we do. And speaking as an English teacher, the range of things that students need to do, the mental rigour they need to demonstrate, the flair, the articulation, the critical thinking is vast from memory and in timed conditions. They're incredibly stressful. And so any grade or reward is an achievement. But Brad's results meant that out of the thousands of students in his year group, he would have been in the top 5-ish%. I think it was interesting that the script writers had Brad articulate that he thought his 7, equivalent to an A back in the day, was disappointing, as this is the trend I do see mirrored in discussions with students and parents who see any grade lower than their predicted target or personal target as a failure. I think Tracy was right in her positivity and her big picture thinking about what an achievement it was. Of course, we should have high expectations, challenge and rigour in exams and in life, but not at the expense of our mental health or of that of our young people. This could be an introduction to a storyline about mental health or anxiety in young people, which I think has been previously explored with Mia, but would be interesting to explore from the perspective of a young man whose voices when struggling aren't always represented in the media. Hopefully this will be an opportunity for Brad to pursue an academic career with or without the patronage of Oliver and the success that can come from it as a comparison to George is clearly more dangerous, but potentially pleasingly and enterprising aspirations. George just needs to make sure he doesn't blow up the cricket pavilion. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that, Lily. I thought she touched on some really big issues there to do with Brad. But first off, we have to say congratulations to Brad, of course. Thoughts and feelings?
Well, I absolutely, Lily, what a fantastic call. That just proves a simple call from someone who is a first-time caller-inner. What a fantastic viewpoint. I mean, I didn't even understand the numbers when they announced what he'd got. Because to me, it's all A, B, C, D, and et cetera, down to you. So having that confirmation that actually a 7 isn't a bad, and in fact, on the Facebook page, I think Stephen Bowden or someone put a chart that shows the equivalent in old money. So 7 is not a disappointing thing, a good prediction for the future. for the anxiety. Boys, we don't get boy anxieties very much. They're either good, they're bad, but they're not anxious. So, good prediction, Lily, and thank you very much for your call.
Absolutely. My heart goes out to teachers and the amount of change that they have to deal with, and the political football, which is teaching, and the fact that us parents do not give them their due as professionals. In every other sphere, somebody who is a professional, we kind of say, okay, you know what you're doing. Not with teachers. We feel that we have, because we've all gone to school, that we have the right to critique them.
Indeed, yeah.
And to tell them how to do their jobs. But anyway, less of me on my soapbox ranting.
But I agree with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madame Berto. We are in, is it Dakar?
Dakar, oui.
Hey, look at me,
hey,
my friend.
Hey, you're multilingual now. You'll be as good as my dog proper. Soon.
All right, that was Lily. Thank you for that, Lily. And we love a first-time caller in a row.
Yeah, we do.
Now we're going to go to Christopher, who I believe you said had a golden larynx.
Hello, everybody. This is Christopher here. Goodness, it's a long time since I've phoned in. Like a lot of people did after lockdown, I abandoned the city and moved to the seaside, which I heartily recommend to any of you. I wanted to talk about Tracy. I've not always been her biggest fan. She and I disagree about the spirit of cricket. But what is very clear in the interactions between her and her children and other people over the past few weeks is that what Tracy has given her children is an extraordinary amount of love. And that has been borne out by the reactions of their children and the way they have supported her. They are fiercely loyal to her. And I think that will in the end go a long way, because in the end, that's all that matters. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Adil. I think it's quite a brave move the BBC have made to cast their very first AI actor to play the part of Adil. As a lot of other people have said, he is charismatic and charming, but ultimately I find not quite plausible. And that is, I think, clearly because he isn't actually a human being. I also have a plot prediction. I think Harrison might actually turn out to be the son of God. I mean, you can kind of see why Harrison, the actor that plays Harrison, gets so much voice work. You know, if like for adverts, if he tells me to buy something, I am going to buy it because I believe him when he says that it's a good product. So anyway, thank you for all you do. Cheerio.
Ooh, who knew that the son of God was walking around on the streets? Of Ambridge,
yeah, definitely. But I agree. I agree with Christopher. I think he would sell me anything. His voice, yeah, definitely.
He does do a lot of voiceover work, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. It's amazing. It's amazing to hear every so often. Even I'm convinced that every so often I've heard him when I, you know, you go to visit a chateau and you take the audio guide. Mm. I think it's Harrison Burns in my ear.
As well as having, you know, a golden larynx, and that's coming from a caller in with a golden larynx. He's also blooming handsome as well. He's kind of wasted on a soap.
Yeah. He's found his niche. I wouldn't know anything about him if he was on another soap, because I don't see any other soaps.
Do you know?
No, nothing. I don't ever watch English telly.
What do the French don't do soaps then?
I suppose they do, but I just don't fit into my lifestyle.
Hmm?
Well, it's a weird thing in France. You'll have to edit all this out because it's far too much blather today. But our main news isn't at 6 o'clock in the evening, it's at 8 o'clock in the evening. So there's all sorts of game shows and things that go up until 8 o'clock. And then there's the news, which lasts for about 45 minutes with local news and stuff, like, just like in England. So about 9 o'clock, you start having programmes. Yeah, I do. So
I got French TV all wrong. I just presume that it's all programmed about philosophy and Descartes and like...
No, it's crap. You know, French TV is completely rubbish. In fact, about 12 years ago, I wrote a blog for a little Brittany-based English website about life in Franglais, because that is exactly what my life's like. And I have to say, my criticism of French television went down very well with English people who'd bothered to get French television, because they all have microphones that they hold in their hands. There's no hidden mics and anything subtle about it. And it's a lot of variety shows. Saturday night, The highlight of Saturday night on the big public television thing this season is Fort Boyard. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, God, it was a big thing in the 70s, the 80s, maybe the 90s, with Melinda Messenger, who was on a fort, a Napoleonic fort in the middle of, in Charente, in the sea. And they people did stupid tasks to get through. That still goes on in France. And in the winter, it's variety programmes. It's crap, I'll tell you. French television is not worth watching.
No. I thought it was going to be like a dusty old Frenchman, beret.
I think there is a station or two like that, yeah.
Yeah, we just jumped off his bicycle and he got and talk about Voltaire for 2 hours.
No, I tell you what, on a Sunday morning when I'm often trying to watch Gardener's World via YouTube on our smart telly, there's some two or three people discussing religion and it is very dusty.
Gosh. All right. Yeah. Well, now we've talked about that for about the best part of 15 minutes. And what else did Christopher say? That Jesus is Harrison.
Yeah.
He hasn't called in for quite some time.
He's moved to the seaside.
Yes.
But where, Christopher? Is that seaside Scottish side or English side, Irish side, elsewhere? I love the seaside.
You know what? I'm guessing it's somewhere cold, windswept and like Scottish, you know.
Oh, that'd
nowhere
be perfect,
sun-kissed and English. It's going to be somewhere that's very bleak, grey.
But what if he's moved to Shetland or the Hebrides or something?
There
Wouldn't
you
that be
go.
Fantastic.
There you
oh,
go.
I would and love everybody... that.
Really? The sun never shines up there. The sun
it
never
does.
Shines up there.
It does. It's beautiful. Doesn't. Not often. Not all the day, any day. It's always... In French, you say une douche écossaise. So it's like at least once every day you get a Scottish shower. But no, lovely. But he talked about Tracy, which was very touching. And I agree with him.
And yeah. I couldn't agree more with what he said, with every word. Tracy's love of her kids is writ large, and the fact that she completely and utterly beats herself up about Brad and worries about the fact that she can't help him, and it's purely out of love. And he is utterly spot on that how you really understand that she's a great mother is the fact that they want to do things for her.
Yeah,
you know, when it was her, but you know, Chelsea's all worried about things we're going to get for her, and then Brad, as we commented on last week. That he said when George was on about getting his, what did George want to get? A Lamborghini? No, Maserati and a Range Rover.
A Range Rover for the weekend.
Yeah. And what Brad wanted to do was, you know, help out his mum.
Yeah, but while we're on the subject of Tracy, do we think she's really lost her job?
Absolutely. That's why Oliver's seen her in...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, so she's lying to the family, she's lying to Jazza, she's coming to terms with a crap thing in a crap situation. Oh, God, I feel for her.
You know, she's been half rumbled already.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one's been able to put two and two together. But Christopher, lovely to hear from you, sir. And us two Dum Dum Hopes love your voice, sir. So you need to call in much, much, much more often. We've missed you, Christopher, up there in wind-swept Scotland, where the sun never shines. Now, quickly going back to our script, it says two calls, then the best and easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumdydum. Don't forget the T in the middle. Also, you can find a link in our show notes, or you can go to dumdydum.com and hit the little red tab.
And don't forget, we need your calls in by 6 p.m. on Sunday, UK time. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to take part.
This is the People's Podcast, which means us fans of the Archers all collaborate to put this thing together. Now, you can submit you can do a caller in a bit, or there are other ways in which you can support this podcast. Now, one of the things you can do is to go on to YouTube, type in Dum-de-dum, and you will see our recorded interviews with our various actors that we've done over the last, I think, like 3 years now, which utterly reminds me to say that on September Friday, the 7th, September the 9th at 7:30, we'll be interviewing Sunny Ormond on... God, I'm dreadful today. We'll be interviewing Sunny Ormond on Zoom. And of course, Sunny plays Lillian. Now, this is going to be an exclusive just for our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. So if you are not a PayPal subscriber or a Patreon subscriber, now is your chance. It's only been exclusive to those. So there is an inducement to become a Patreon of the show. Now, if you haven't done that, if you can't do that, we understand that we do have a cost of living crisis in the UK. What you can do is maybe hit subscribe on whatever podcatcher that you listen to us on. And if you wouldn't mind, give us a 5-star review, because that means that more people then get to hear about the podcast. So there you go. There are ways of which you can support the People's Podcast. Now, before we go back to our calls, don't forget you can send us an email if you don't fancy hearing your voice by going onto dumdydum.com and hitting contact us. Now, back to the calls. So after Christopher, he of the Golden Larynx, we have Witherspoon of the Upper Lower East West Side.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First, hearty congratulations to Brad for those outstanding GCSE results. Grades like that take both natural ability and lots of hard work and sacrifice. Brad also demonstrated maturity, ability to learn from his mistakes, and sense of self when he drew a line in the sand and once again stood up to George. Meanwhile, a shout out to Chelsea as well. She also showed maturation as she expressed pride in her younger brother's accomplishments, defended Brad against George, and even apologized to Oliver for her sharp tongue. That brings us back to George. I'm reminded of that 1950s classic film, The Bad Seed. If you haven't seen it, please do. It's a wonderful combination of high camp, family drama, mystery, and a chilling performance by the young Patty McCormick in the role of Rhoda. Spoiler alert, a child double murderer and the unknown granddaughter of a serial killer. The Bad Seed, who was brought up by well-meaning parents. I won't spoil the end and reveal what fate befalls the blonde, pigtailed devil child. So is George a bad seed? Can anyone be just a bad seed without any influence from their environment? George tried to paint his upbringing as Dickensian, complete with a physically abusive stepmother and an emotionally abusive stepfather slash uncle. He certainly exaggerated there, but his parental parentage must have been confusing to him. And he was dealt some bad cards in the genetics of the Harbin family. Or was it the emotional influences of his criminal maternal relatives? Was Emma neglectful when she worked so many hours to buy her dream house? How did Nick's death and Will's subsequent suicidal depression affect George? So much to discuss, and I am out of time. Talk to you soon.
You see, Witherspoon partly agrees with me. I said that he must have been confused, the poor boy growing up. It's not to excuse him of a criminal behavior, but you know, that's got to be a contributing factor. Also, and I did hint at this in my intro when I said the not forgotten slap. I always thought that when Nick slapped George, and this was like a good 10 years ago, and then it was just completely and utterly forgotten about, that this was a massive missed opportunity. Now, very, very obviously, a bit of child abuse is not going to send somebody completely off the rails in adulthood. But I commend the script writers for not forgetting that. And it put into context the fact that George says, I never liked her.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one slap that we heard obviously equates to more things happened off screen, because it always happens in The Archers. Yeah, I thought it was very telling, that little statement from George. She wasn't all she was cracked up to be.
When Will first met Nick, she was not the saint that she then ended up being.
Mm.
You know, the person who went along to the WI, who was a real kind of glue in the village.
And a glue in the relationship between the children and their various parents, because it's such a muddle of stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So again, I really commend the script writers for not forgetting that, because it, apparently after it happened, it kind of went nowhere. Didn't Will actually break up with her for a bit because of that? They had a time away and then they came back. But I can't remember if that was the reason.
Yeah, I can't remember if that was the reason or whether it was to do with her children, her ex. You know, it was a real muddle of stuff.
Yeah.
No, as recomposed families are, you know, it's always a muddle. Mm. And sometimes it works well, sometimes it works badly, and sometimes it just muddles along.
Mm. I like that expression, recomposed. I never heard that. I thought the expression was blended.
That's in
is that French, a direct French?
In French. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't understand the. I didn't know there was an expression in English. Blended family, yeah, it's a very good expression. But we say famille recomposée in French. So rebuilt
like
family, and we are a famille recomposée, so we understand that. So. Well, good call, Witherspoon.
Yes, a call from our resident physiotherapist. That is what he does, isn't it?
Physiotherapy, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Or dentistry or something. I have to agree with him, though, about the relationship between seeing Brad and Chelsea, that joy that she had for her brother.
Mm.
And I thought that, a bit like the call from Christopher, where it shows Tracy, how Tracy has brought them up to love each other as a unit along with her. And I felt that was very well portrayed.
Yes, and especially as in what we have heard in the last few weeks, a little bit of kind of sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
When he went to work at Lower Loxley.
Yeah, she was horrible.
So, but actually, they do love each other, and they, you know, they're just teenage kids, aren't they? You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're going to be in each other's faces, but fundamentally, they know that they love their family. So, Witherspoon, our resident, what do you say was a sports therapist?
Yeah, but I'm sure it was something to do with mechanics. Who knows?
Well, anyway, Mr. Spoon, we thank you for calling us from the Upper Lower East West Side.
Hello. Jenny with a G from Coventry here. Firstly, I'd just like to say thank you to the Charlotte Higgins show. I enjoyed that very much. However, just wanted to talk a bit about the horror that is George, but picking up on Glyn's point last week about family rifts, my theory is that the rift would be not be Susan and Tracy, but Susan and Emma, leading to the complete breakdown of the Grundy Carter Horribing clan. Emma, already upset at George moving out, will cry on Susan's shoulder, initially blaming Will, obviously. However, Susan, unable to keep her mouth shut, will blame Eddie for condoning George's errant behaviour with the vapes, and then go on to share her suspicions about the postbox. Emma, on hearing her mum knew George was the arsonist, but didn't say anything, hits the roof, accusing her of repeating her previous crimes of harbouring a criminal, and cuts herself off from her mother. If nothing else, it would be nice just to hear Emma in full battle mode, because we've not heard from her for a while. And hopefully, with George safely behind bars, this will save the lovely Brad from George's evil clutches. Anyway, until next time, bye.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And just shows you, because this web in the village, the familial web, is so interwoven, that this can play out in so many different ways. You know, if someone has beef with somebody else, you know, the permutations are literally endless.
They are. What a good call. What else can you say?
Mm.
I agree. I mean, I agree totally with Glyn's possible outcome. I agree totally with Jenny's complete outcome. So, hey-ho. I think I'll just agree with anything at the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. What do we feel about George? You know, George obviously is a proper wrong, and we've said that time after time, but he does know how to manipulate people, doesn't he? He does know that Will is a weak spot, and he can just turn it on with his dad. You know, his dad feels guilty about not living with his son, et cetera, et cetera. Though what I thought was wonderful this week, that the exchange between Will and Ed, and Will says, I know that you love him, you know, which again, considering their childhood and them hating each other, can acknowledge, and of course Will's gone on his own journey in the last like 4 years or so, but Will can acknowledge that Ed does love George, and that's just not a question type of thing. So I thought that was really significant. But, you know, George does know how to play everybody off against each other, even down to Ed, who's really hard on him because Ed did the same and worse at round about the same age with the heroine. So Ed is just scared, isn't he? And then the fact that he then says, I want to go and live with my dad, then Ed does an about face as well. And it's like, oh, George, blah, blah, blah. And maybe I was too hard on you, etc. So he is properly conniving, that boy, isn't he?
He is, but he learnt it at the knees of a master or two with Joe and Eddie. You know, they've been very large in his life. I think he's learnt to wheedle the Grundy way. So, but I agree with you about the Ed and William conversation. I really love that. I feel that the last few years after the death of Nick, they've become friendlier. They're working together. They've matured. About bloody time, but they've matured.
No, they absolutely have. And just to back up your point about him, George learning at the knee of his grandfather and great-grandfather, he said, didn't care about Nick dying, but I did cry loads when great-grandpa Joe died.
Yeah.
To go and underline who we saw as being important mentors in his life. It was great-grandpa Joe, wasn't it? And
it was.
Obviously Eddie.
I dread my parents ever coming out about things I did when I was a teenager.
What did you do when you were a teenager, Jack?
Can't go there. We haven't got enough time, Royfield.
No, you know what? Give us a little taster. Give us a taster.
I once went to see David Bowie in concert in Rotterdam without telling my parents I was going.
Oh, wow. So you crossed an international border as a minor.
A 70-year-old. Without telling your parents. Yeah, because I lived in a port, you know, if you remember, I was born and brought up in the Immingham region. And at the time, Tourline had a ferry on a Friday evening. So I went to my friend's house and her and I caught the ferry. In fact, we went to Rotterdam, well, Europort. But in fact, then we caught a train. And I don't even remember where we went now, somewhere in Holland or maybe over the German border. And we went to see David Bowie in concert. There you go. I came back, we'd been, her mum thought she was at mine and mine. I don't think my parents know about that even now, so maybe they wouldn't tell that to my teenage, I don't have any teenage children anymore, teenage granddaughter.
Well, listen, I applaud your errant behaviour, you know. none of this smoking behind the bike sheds for you.
Oh, God, international travel. How disgusting, no. No.
International travel. That's the way you rolled.
Yeah, I was brought up a very good Methodist. I didn't drink and smoke.
Obviously not that, you know, a good Methodist at all.
The Methodists don't mind if you travel, but you just don't drink and smoke.
There endeth the sermon for today. Good people.
Yeah, indeed.
Right, now there's from Jenny with the G. Thank you for that. We're going to go to Natan in Portland in the Pacific Northwest.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. This is Natan from Portland, Oregon. I'm a first-time caller and error. First of all, thank you very much for this podcast, which I really enjoy. I was inspired to call in this week because of the plot involving Denise and Adil and the fortune-telling, which has me kind of bewildered. These are two characters who really seem to have their lives together. They're very focused. They both have very serious careers. They're well educated. And all of a sudden, they've fallen into this bizarre fortune-telling plot, which involves Adil kind of getting caught up in Lillian's scheme. Why would he ever do such a thing? He's totally in control of every part of his life, seemingly, and all of a sudden he seems to be out of his depth, out of control. He has nothing to say when it comes to this fortune-telling scheme. And then Denise, she comes in and she takes what he says seriously, and she's going to base her life, major life decisions on the palm reading. I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not really sure why the writers chose to go in that direction with these two characters, because it does just seem so out of character for each of them. So that was me yelling at the radio this week. Stay safe, everyone. Bye.
It's hard not, in part at least, to agree that Ardil, who can apparently do everything, he can deliver a great presentation via PowerPoint, have the villagers eaten at the palm of his hand. You know, he's obviously, it's multi-million pound sale. He's kind of handling the transition from one set of owners to a new, et cetera, et cetera. But then he does a little bit of faux palmistry at the village fete. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Mm. But, you know, suspension of disbelief and all of that.
Also, Denise, I mean, I think it's just a scriptwriter's way of letting us know where Denise and Alistair are, because Alistair was completely gobsmacked by the fact that she's leaving to go on a little sabbatical by and being replaced somewhere else by the bosses above. So without talking to him, I mean, I was quite surprised about that, because I thought they were actually close enough. You know how I feel about, everybody knows, everybody heard last week how I feel about this kind of palmistry rubbish predictions.
I try not to talk about plot devices which I think are clunky, but I do think this palmistry thing was just incredibly ham-fistedly done. We didn't need that for us to know that Alistair fancies Denise, and or that Denise has misread the signals, because we know that Alistair actually wrote the speech, which was delivered by Jacob, right? It just felt like a very clumsy way of getting us to the point where Jacob says, Alistair, it's very obvious that you fancy her. If I can see it, everyone can kind of like see it, type of thing. We didn't need this nonsense where Adil is Gypsy Rosie Lee, to get there. And I just thought we deserve slightly better than that from the scriptwriters.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was just one of those nonsense things. They don't happen very often for me, but this was one that, and when I listened to it, I just kind of put it down to my lack of ability to concentrate fully on the story this week. And I kind of just dismissed it. So
it wasn't your fault. It was just shoddily done.
They'll get better.
Because you know what? We praise the script writers.
Yeah,
absolutely. The vast majority of the time, I've been listening to this thing for 40 years. Mm. You, probably ditto for you. Yeah. And there's got to be a reason why we keep listening, because it's becoming good.
It is good. It is good. And in fact, that was just a good big... The word of the week in this house is chonk.
Could you repeat that for us?
Chonk.
Agreed. And for another bit of nonsense, Denise hanging out with Chelsea.
Where did that come from, for goodness
exactly.
sake? That's chonky.
Right. Gotcha. Right. Now, Dan, you know what? I love a bit of Portland. And I saw the Portland Timbers play the Seattle Sounders about 5 years ago. Bonkers they are, Madame Berto. Bonkers. The Portland
Timbers. What sport is that?
Football.
Football, American
real
football.
Real football.
Not soccer.
No. Steady now. Proper football.
Ball. Like the cross between rugby and football.
No. Football.
Okay, jolly good. Do you remember that we're talking about a British programme?
Yes, but our callers call from all over the world.
I know. And in fact, I want to say Nathan, because we'd call you Nathan is here. It's educating me, because I didn't know where Portland, Oregon was. So I had to look on a map.
Oh.
So there you go.
Charming city of about 1 million people. And I tell you something about Portland, right? Because it's super duper liberal. There's a show called Portlandia, which I think has maybe ended now. But if you want to see a nicely absurd comedy about all the progressive types in Portland, it's called Portlandia. It's very funny. However, black people were not even allowed to live in Portland as late as 1928.
For goodness sake. That is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really shocking considering how liberal the place is now.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, it was set up as a white haven. Moving swiftly on, Natan, yep. Welcome to the clan. We Indeed. Fully appreciate you, sir. Now, from a new quarter in a row, we go to an old stalwart, and it's our Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. It's been a few weeks, and it's only Tuesday, so I'm probably going to be disproved by things by the rest of the week, but what the hell. Anyway, three things to say, because like, it's all going on already, and it's only Tuesday. First of all, I just loved the Monday episode. It was just a piece of brilliance, I think. The juxtaposition of the argument at the Grundy's and all the hooing and froing at the vets. But the argument in particular, and I just think that these things work so well in the Archers because we know these people and we've known, you know, all their lives more or less. And the way that, God, poor Clary. I mean, I love Clary. She's the salt of the earth, but my goodness me, she puts up with some ridiculous stuff from her family. And she's a peacemaker and she's a peacemaker, but she's not the appeaser. You know, she didn't let Eddie get away with having kind of tolerated bad behaviour. She withheld the gingerbread. Go, Clary! So, yeah, just really interesting to hear the dynamic. And poor Ed, like, he doesn't want George to go down the same bad path, but he's going about it all the wrong way. Bless him. So then, apart from that, George, I mean, he's just unremittingly awful, isn't he? And, like, I could do with a little bit of light and shade with George at the moment. All we're getting is complete villain. It's a bit full on. So I'm hoping maybe we might see a little bit of, like, you know, pleasantness from him at some point, or a reason to like him at all. There you go. And finally, do I detect a slight change of dynamic in Rory's relationship with Julianne? Because last time she showed up, he was at her beck and call, he dropped everyone just for her. This time he's being more standoffish and she's being more pushy. What's all that about? Don't know.
Oh, there you go. I tell you, here's an interesting thing. That has got to be the storyline utterly from left field. Everything else is kind of, you know, grist for the mill, so to speak. Bit of villainy in the Grundy Horobin family, blah, 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 blah. Somebody fancies somebody and the object of the affection gets it the wrong way around, right? I can't remember the last soap I watched and somebody was an escort /prostitute, of which we had some level of sympathy. You know, they haven't come in as that, right? They've become that. This is a bold storyline, which is dealing with the blurring of boundaries when you are a sex worker, because that's what he is now, full stop. And the other interesting thing is, with the exception of Claire, nobody else has talked about it.
Extraordinary. I mean, I'm completely shocked. I expected, when I opened up SpeakPipe this afternoon, that it would all be about that story.
Yeah.
I find it extraordinary that nobody has called us in about
it. It's interesting what storylines have a resonance with the listeners. And this one hasn't so far at all.
But I have a theory that it's one of those storylines that actually makes us feel uncomfortable. And I'm not sure why, because if it was the other way round, it was a grooming or a using of a call girl, a sex worker by a middle-aged woman to a middle-aged man, that would make me feel very uncomfortable because he's only 19, Rory. Do we know what age Julianne is?
No, I don't know. She's at least late 30s, early 40s.
She's a mature professional woman. So would it be different if it was the other way around?
It absolutely would.
Are we just going with our prejudices about sex working? Sex working is in fact, my son did work as a nude model for an art school, and his father, who is a bit stuffy, decided that he said that he thought it was nothing less than selling his body. But I didn't. I thought, well, good for Christopher.
Well, and also just confidence in your physiology to be able to say, here I am, all clothes off.
Yeah.
Fine. You know,
exactly.
Bit of a joy. Bit of a joy, your Christopher.
he probably is a bit of a joy. He's a joy to me. But also hey, he's but not a sex worker exactly.
There is a big blurry line, obviously, between an escort and a prostitute. And at either end, the two are different. You know, you can pay somebody to escort you to a function so you don't look like a Billy No Mates. Initially, the thing that a lot of us listeners couldn't get our head around, because if she is the age that we suspect, mid to late 30s, early 40s, her turning up to a professional engagement with a 19-year-old on her arm is going to look odd.
Yeah,
you're best off just going by yourself, because you're going to invite people to question, right?
Yeah, indeed. And she sounds like a confident woman. So
she does.
She's very confident. So I don't understand why she would put herself in that position.
But here's the thing, though, right? You can be confident and you can be on the top of your game professionally, but it doesn't mean that you've got all your personal relationships sorted. And maybe she's devoted so much time to her career professionally that she's put aside the romantic, the emotional. You know, she wouldn't be unique in that.
Indeed.
So, and then that, again, is a reason why there is this industry of escorts. So at least if you're going to a works function or professional association function, and it's just expected that you come with a plus one.
Yeah,
you have
not a 19-year-old boy.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's
exactly
the thing that I'm uncomfortable about, is the age difference.
Exactly. But I'm uncomfortable about it in a different way, purely the optics, because people would say, unless she's deliberately going to these events with a much younger man to say, I've got a toy boy, in effect.
Yeah.
Maybe she's making a statement. Yeah. Right.
And we don't know anything about her. So that may well be true.
Yeah. And that's something which we never really factored in before. So I think there is the, if you just want to have sex, let's be brutal about it. Right. A 19-year-old man is in the prime of his sexual life. He can go all night. Right. Mm-hmm. And is going to be nice and firm for you to ogle at and to touch and to be touched by. That's just facts. Right. Yeah. If you want true companionship, it's not that it's impossible to find it with somebody who's half your age, but chances are it's not companionship. But what appears to be happening here is a complete blurring of the lines because Rory does have feelings for her.
Yeah.
Not only does he admire her, as he said to Ben, but actually he likes spending time with her.
Yeah, he's putting her before his close friends, even when he's in Ambridge. He's making the choice. And I don't believe that's about the money.
I think it's the two. He likes her, and they've got into a habit of her paying. So there's going to come a time when she's going to say, well, Rory, maybe I like you too. Do I have to pay? Or it's going to come a point where he's going to say, I really like you. And she's going to say, no, stop. We have an arrangement.
Yeah.
Sure. It's one of the two with this storyline.
Well, I just hope it doesn't play out in the next week. I think should be a slower burn, because I'm not here next week, so I won't be able to have a discussion with you about it. So I want them to kind of forget talking about it until in 2 weeks' time we can talk about it again. But I want to know what other people think as well, because we've had no feedback about it whatsoever.
Just before we completely go away from talking about things Ambridge and start to wind the show up, if I didn't say this before, if you can watch the film Leo Grand, which is with Emma Thompson, it's not exactly the Julianne storyline, but here is a woman who I think her husband has passed away, but her husband was her only sexual partner. She's in her late 50s, early 60s, and sex was very perfunctory. And she decides that she needs, you know, to experience everything that sex can be. And she has this much younger escort, prostitute, and it all takes place in one hotel room after it's like three or four different visits. Leo Grand, it's brilliant. And she, talking about body positivity, there is this one shot towards the end where Emma Thompson is completely naked, looking at herself in the mirror and basically going, yeah, you know. And for a woman of her age and stature as an actor. Wonderful. It's a wonderful performance, and it's quite touching. So Leo Grand is the film which came out this year, which I recommend everybody give a watch now.
Can I just endorse mm-hmm. that? She is my twin. We're born in the same year. And I agree. I thought it was a fabulous film, and I thought that it was very uplifting as a woman in the latter years of life to see her acting as she did following the relationship and the death of her husband. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So there are all of our caller innerers this week. And if I don't say so myself, I think, good listener, you've been right royally entertained by the quality of calls from all four corners of the world. Well, from Portland, New York, from Coventry, from Scotland, and even from Clapham. So we had callers from all over the English-speaking world. Now, those are our caller innerers. Now it's time for our emailer innerers. And we had one from Helen. And Helen did our Dum-de-Dum tune this week.
That's right. And she said, "Hello, Royfield. Here's a little ditty myself and my 8-year-old daughter did this morning. I'm a massive Archers addict and have been listening ever since I was little and my mum had it on in the house. I've grown up with it. Now my daughter Holly also loves listening to the omnibus with me on a Sunday, which is very nice. I did the piano and the drums, and she helped me sing and she played her jingle stick. Sorry if it's a bit rubbish, but we had fun doing it." Oh, flipping heck, Helen, it was fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely was. Now it's time for reviews from Apple iTunes. And this week we only had the one, but you know what? It's a 5-star review. It's called, and the title is, "The Go-To Podcast, Dum-de-Dum." And it's from Anthony and Sophia. And they posted it on Apple iTunes and they live in Australia.
"My partner and I live in Australia, and so we're always a bit behind in listening. This means we can't interact as much on social media as it would spoil the plot. We've been listening to Dumpty Dum for a few years now, and I've been an Archers fan for about a decade. This is the first thing we listen to after catching up on the omnibus. Keep up the good work, and thanks for all your effort and fantastic hosts and guests."
Thank you for that, Anthony and Sophia. And if you haven't done so already, get yourselves onto Tractor, pin yourself to that map, because I know that that's kind of receiving a little bit of life now. I always get these alerts when people actually sign up for Tractor. And I know that just last week, at least 4 people actually did. So if you haven't done so already, pin yourself to the map, go to onto dumdum.com, hit Tractor. We don't ask for your absolute address, just give an approximation of where you live. And the whole idea is that other dum-de-dummers can then actually see if they live close to you, then through Tractor, they can actually message you and maybe meet up for a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, or even maybe something a little bit harder and whatever. So it's just a great way of keeping this whole community together. So if we're talking about Tractor and socials, possibly meet up in real life, what we can do is talk about social media. So what has our Facebook group been talking about this week, I hear you all ask? Let's find out as we sit back and hear the roundup of things going on in the Dum-de-Dum Facebook group with R. Katie.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi up my ducks, it's Katie here, at Katie Peeland on Twitter and Instagram. Let's start the week with a positive, shall we? Melly McMerriweather said she thought Tuesday's episode was splendid, and Christine Wilson said she was enjoying the whole week. Yay! Now on to the first hot topic. Paul Newman is fully expecting George to follow in his great Uncle Alf's career criminal footsteps. Harry Clark, like me, is looking forward to a whole Breaking Bad story arc. And Caroline Wright is wondering if George's farts are now vanilla-scented. Next, the stained glass saga continues. Martin van der Hervel shared some stained glass window inspiration for the twins. Paul Delvin showed the inspiration for the Grundy Horror Bin Lads window. Then Fiona Jenkinson shared a story featured in the Church Times. Finally on to Rory. Genevieve Ann Holmes feels like Rory needs to check his privilege. And fair point, said Rob Williams, but wasn't sure which one of the interchangeable teenage boys was talking to Rory at the time. Denise Tomlinson predicted that Julianne could be pregnant, while a few other listeners thought she's either just needy or in love with him, or vice versa. While Ruth Paul shared a discussion about two consenting adults and if it would be different with a younger female and older male. Good point. In other news, if anyone's struggling with the newfangled GCSE marking system, Rob Williams asked for advice about it, and the comments are well worth a read. Lillian McCarthy pointed out Alastair's now in Egypt. Check the comments if you're not following. Shirley Farron Anstey shared a perfect meme for Chelsea and Gemma to laugh about one day. Sarah Evans realised what type of rock Tony's been using. Catherine Newnham asked whether we think Joy's new bow is a good un, a mix of replies in that post. Paula Eggers showed a video which could explain why Will enjoys Toya and Robert stream so much. I agree, she looks amazing. And Lillian McCarthy shared another video. Rob Williams wondered, are we touching on another early onset dementia storyline? I hope not. Louise Lawton shared a funny clip from The Guardian and an F-bomb in Ambridge. And finally, Melly McMerriweather announced she's been following Dumpty Dum since 2019. Happy anniversary and thanks for sticking around. As usual, welcome to the newbies, make yourselves known, settle in with a cuppa and let us know your thoughts. Until next time, ta-ra!
Thank you for that, Katie, and thank you for everyone who has posted their thoughts on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If we're on Facebook, before we go on and do anything else, it's time for us to welcome our new Facebook members. This week we had
Christine Wilson,
Claire Lambert,
Pat Brown,
Sarah Jenkins,
Philippa Verica.
Is that the Pat Brown that used to be all over Twitter and is somewhat of a stalwart of the Dumpty Dums? I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, might be. You never know. We are on Twitter under @DumptyDum. Our team always includes the Archers hashtag using a capital T and an A so the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, that hashtag is your gateway to the hugely enjoyable tweet along, both in the evenings and during the omnibus. Also, try and include @DumptyDum in your tweet so more people get to see it, which helps to keep our community growing.
As well as @DumptyDum on Twitter, where can you be found?
I can be occasionally, when I'm not totally occupied, found on there. I'm @JBertoSantGwen.
We're talking about Twitter, so it's time for Tweet of the Week.
Hello, Royfield, Jacqueline and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of Tweets of the Week. If you want an entree into the Archers Tweet Along this week, I'd recommend looking at the to and fro between people who see Rory earning a bit of money while having fun with an older woman versus those who see sexual exploitation of an emotionally vulnerable teenager. There's quite a bit of discussion about terminology too. Gigolo, prostitute, rent boy, sex worker, you decide. Next, I want to give a special mention to two extremely brief tweets that each made me laugh. First, Sally Ronaldson @MillOnFred used just one word to sum up a storyline. Hoary. Then our old friend Quentin Rayner @13MinuteMan got a different storyline down to two words. Toya Wilpots. Both made me laugh. Now to the medal winners for this week, with thanks as ever to the posse who send @DumptyDum suggestions of great tweets. Please do keep them coming. In bronze position. I'm setting myself up for trouble trying to read this one properly, but I'll give it a go. It's Richard Beveridge at Biffoprop, who says, "And a year after doffing his school cap, his secret arrangement may make Rory snap. Because she's much older, he's now the beholder of Julianne's gilded cougar trap." In silver, it's James A. at Exeter Dormouse with this little scene. Denise: "It's a bit boring. There's no pickle at home, but sometimes you've just got to put up with what you've got." Alistair: "I'm not sure I agree. I'll give you a tomato." And Jacob says, "I'm on the autistic spectrum, and even I know you're not talking about a sandwich." And in gold, it's Eliza Bennett at Eliza Bennett 3. "You're a prostitute, Rory. Doesn't quite have the ring of 'You're a wizard, Harry.' But it was a fair try, I guess." That's it for this week. See you all again at the next Tweet Along.
Thank you for that, Theo. Our purple pumpkin, as always, 3 corking. Fantastic tweets. Don't forget, folks, we are also on Instagram. And we're at DumDeeDum if you want to follow us there. And again, I'd like to say thank you for Katie, who you heard do the Facebook social media roundup, for all of our sterling work on that platform.
Thanks as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos, Shambridge for her voices, and to our podcasting godmother, Lucy V. Freeman. And thanks as ever to P&Q for their sterling work in the last year.
And just before we completely sign this off, don't forget, Friday, September the 9th, 7:30 UK time, if you are a Patreon, you will have an evening with Sonny Ormond, aka Lillian Bellamy. And if you would like a little bit of a taster of maybe what Lillian is like in the flesh, why don't you go on to YouTube, type in DumDeeDum, and you will see, I don't know how many interviews we actually ended up doing. I don't know, maybe 20, 15 to 20 interviews we did with various Archers actors. You can sit down, chow down on that. There's some great insights, some great laughs, and a whole lot of fun. There you go. That's me saying ta-ra a bit, toodle-pip. How do you sign off, Jacqueline Berthaud?
Au revoir tout le monde.
We've done a dum-de-dum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.